All right, today we begin in chapter 4, the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, in reality, the first two chapters, that's the way I'd put it. It's the book of Ecclesiastes is hard to outline and say, okay, here's chunk, here's chunk, here's chunk. But in reality, the first two chapters tells you everything about life, if you want to put it that way. And when it sums it all up in telling you everything about life, what I mean is it tells you that if your goal is directed to anything in this life, then whatever it is going to be vain. Now, chapter 3 starts telling us how to live. Now, chapter 3 is kind of a buffer in there. I kind of put it like this, the way I'm thinking about it right here. Chapters 1 and 2 is telling you vanity. Everything is vanity. Pleasure, power, wisdom, all of these things that you set your goals upon. All human goals are going to end up vain and empty. And so it tells you then how to live. Now, chapter 3 is kind of a buffer in there. As you start out then with 4 on down through 11, we're going to have something else. I'll talk about this and I'll come back to this. Now, up here, it tells you that all things are vain without God, really is what it's saying. Life without God on this earth will end up vain in every way. Now, down here, this tells you then principles to live by. It tells you certain things that won't work. Mainly, that's what it says. Rather than telling you what will work, mainly it tells you what won't work down here. So this is kind of an unusual thing, but you could say that we're talking about principles right here to live by. And the way it approaches it is saying, this will work. If you think this will work, it won't. Now, chapter 3 is kind of a buffer in there, in so much that, again, it tells you all things are vain, and it also gives you some principles to live by. In other words, it kind of goes off into that. Now, the first principle that you're to live by, which is a policy principle that we learned there, is go with the flow. That's my word. Now, what's Solomon's word? What do you mean by that? When I say go with the flow, what? There is a time, a season for everything. That's right. So operate within the time and the season. Don't buck the system. That's my word. Solomon says there is a time and season for everything. So his is poetical, his makes sense, his is the truth. The way I'm putting it is rather crude, but it stands really the same thing. You want to be happy, don't buck the system. You want to be happy, learn how to live in this life. You want to be happy and be a farmer, learn when to plant and learn when to harvest. If you want to be a carpenter, learn when to tear a building down, learn when to build a building up. Whatever it is in life, you learn to go with the system. The world was not made for you. You are put here for a period of 70 years. It's a short period of time. And so don't fight it. Live that 70 years within the system. People were doing it before you got here. They'll be doing it after you get here, after you leave. When you go, you'll hardly ever be missed. There will be a few people shed a few tears, and then those people that love you so much one day will say, what was their name? See, we forget really what the name is, and it doesn't take long for it to happen. 2 to 3 generations. Again, how many of you know your grandparents' first name? Hold up your hand. Okay, how many of you do not know your grandparents' first name? Okay, and how many of you know your great-grandparents' first name? Oh, now we got our braggers, see, right? Come get down now, let's see. And we can take care of them real fast, see, all they hold up their hand with great pride. How many of you know your great-great-great-grandparents' first name? If you'll let your hand under your fist. All right, somebody may know that if you... somebody spent a lot of money going back in a family tree, but the point is, who cares? Right? Who cares who my great-great-granddad was? After all, I only have my blood. His blood in my veins. I inherited what he passed on. I am what he was. Who cares? Because today, I'm something great. Who are you? I'm what my grandparents passed on to me. But who cares? The world is made around me. See how foolish it sounds when you're doing that? But I don't care enough to even know my I don't even know my great-grandparents' first name. See? Who cares? Alright, this is the thing that we learned. Live within the system. Now, chapter 12 now then is going to give you the truth of the matter. It's going to lay it all out and say, now here is the way it really is. This is the positive approach. This is how you put it all together. So up here it's very despondent. Sounds real bad. Here tells us stuff that we don't like to hear. Down here it's going to tell us some principles, good and bad, that we don't particularly care to hear. But finally then we get the entire truth on down. Okay. Now, as we start in chapter 4, here now are some new things that we're going to learn. He said, "Then I returned and saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun." He said, I looked around and I saw a lot of people being oppressed, that is, taken advantage of. Now, you stop to think, really, how many ways are people taken advantage of? If I ask you to bring back a paper next week, out of all the different ways that people take advantage of other people, could you fill a sheet of paper? Be very easy, wouldn't it? Does one mate take advantage of another mate in a marriage? Does children take advantage of parents? Parents take advantage of children. Uncles take advantage of nephews. Nephews take advantage of grandpa. And grandpa takes advantage of... And on down the line you go. You have some big oppressions. You have some little oppressions. But how many people are taking advantage of other people right now? Well, he said, I looked at this thing. And as I saw it, he said, it was terrible. It says, I looked and behold the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of the oppressor there was power, but they had no comforter. Now really, when you get to looking at it, that is about the way the system works. When some innocent person is taken advantage of by someone else, the person who is taking the advantage is generally somebody with some power, is it not? Either power that they've derived by wealth or by a position in life, prestige, education, something that people will look at that they can kind of hold over somebody else's head, and they will use this to oppress somebody of a lesser status in the social ladder. So as you look at this, the oppressed person can be just as innocent as they can possibly be. They go home, they cry themselves to sleep with tears. Who's on their side? 999 times out of 1,000, nobody. No. Who's on the side of the other? A lot of people. A lot of people, the peers that are around, you know, oh yeah, and they're talking about this person and they're running the person down and they're hurting the person and they're taking the person to law and everything under the sun. The power is generally on the side of the oppressor. Where would you like to see the power? On the other way, right? See, this is the reason why that certain movies have such great appeal. Now, in today's life, we don't have movies with heroes, but still, movies with heroes still catch on and people like to do this. You take an old Western movie, and it's always based around one thing. Take John Wayne, anything that you want to take, see? They have these old Westerns. Where was the hero? Stop to think. Where was that hero? Where did he stand? What was his part in this? Was he with the majority fighting the widow that has the 40 acres that the rich man's trying to get a hold of? Was John Wayne out cutting her fence and letting the rich man's cow in there? No. No, it's that poor widow down there that's barely making a living on the South 40 and this rich man is trying to get
that property away from her, and up rides John Wayne. And the movie starts, and so he then is on the side of the oppressed. And we like that. We identify with that. It's good. It gives us a good feeling because we like to see help come. But in real life, how's it work? Well, in real life, it's generally the other way. So he said, I looked at that, and he said, that's just not right. So he said, here is my attitude toward life when I look at it. Wherefore, I praise the dead that have been long dead more than the living that are yet alive. Yea, better than them both did I esteem him that hath not yet been. In other words, there's somebody that's even better than the person who's already lived and died, and that is the person who's never lived in this world, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. It's tough to live in this life, is what he's saying. As you look out in society, you see these things, and it's not fair, and it's tough. And when you are oppressed, the feeling you have is like that. You just want to die. You want to get out of it. The deeper the oppression, the more that you would like to die. And do you ever hear anybody jumping off a bridge, turning a hose on himself in an automobile, and killing themselves or shooting themselves and so forth? What they're saying is it's better to die than to live. I'm oppressed. I don't know how to handle it. Well, actually, when you look at it, these people who commit suicide are pretty smart people. Don't call them fools. They're pretty smart. A whole lot smarter than you are, because you're still sticking around putting up with that foolishness. And next week, you're going to get some more of it. The following week, you're going to get some more of it. And people are going to cheat you out of money. They're going to say ugly things about you. You're going to be hurt all the way through life. And here you sit. Well, they already got out of this old world. They're smarter than you are. Unless you go ahead and read down through chapter 12. See? That is, if there is no God, if this life is all there is, see, if this is it, that's the way he's approaching it, then that would be a good way to go. Why stay around and put up with it? What do you do with a fly when he's buzzing around your nose? You swat him, don't you? Get rid of the discomfort. Try to be as comfortable as you can. So, if it's more comfortable to kill yourself and get out of this mess, go ahead and do it. That's what he's saying. That's how he's approaching it, if this life is all there is. But that's why in reading the book of Ecclesiastes, you have to get through all 12 chapters in order to see the happiness and the contentment you see that you can have. Well, there's another thing. There's some of you sitting here that says, well, tell you what, I have learned the secret of life. I've learned if you get wisdom, wealth, power, all these things, sure, that causes problems. So I'm just going to sit back and mind my own business. I have a lot of ability. I can make my money. I'll just get a job, or I'll do my own thing. I'll work hard. I'll become a skilled craftsman. I'll give my employer a good day's work for the pay he gives me. I'll go in business for myself where I'm not a burden to anybody, and I'll just do a good job and behave myself. That's honorable, isn't it? That's really honorable. You know what's going to happen to you? You have problems. That's right. Because if you are successful, then in verse 4, then I saw all labor and every skillful work. Now, he said, I looked around and I saw these people, these hard-working people. What do you think of bums? You don't like them, do you? All right, we all like hard-working people. All right, so then I looked at these hard-working people and I looked at these skillful people. People with a lot of skill. They were skilled in whatever work they were doing. They just absolutely could do a masterful job. He said, I saw that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. Now, what do people say about you if you're really skillful? Do they say, you know, that is wonderful. That person is so skillful. They haven't made these big blunders and they've taken care of themselves and they don't butt into other people's business. They do their own business. They get up, they go to work every day, and all the work they turn out is so skillful, it's so nice, and they are such fine people, and they write you a letter every day telling how nice you are, don't they? No. That's right. Well, if I had what he had, I could have done the same thing. If I'd have been born, you know, in the family he was born in, and my daddy had given me this, and blah, 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 and blah. And besides that, if you're very successful, you know that he cheated on the way up, he blah, 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 and the way you go, and you're gonna catch it, you see? So that is not going to bring you happiness. After you've worked and you developed your skill and then people are going to say these things about you, it's going to hurt. Makes that bridge look a whole lot better, doesn't it? You see? He said, this is not the answer. Well, before we go any farther, let me ask you this. Which is the best? Since that's not the answer. To be a skilled craftsman and work hard, or never to develop a skill and be a bum? You got your choice. Both of them are going to cause you problems. Which one's best? Go ahead and take your skill. See? Go ahead and take your skill. We've already learned that in other things. You're either going to be a wise person or a fool. Either way you go, you're going to have problems. So, which way are you going to take? Take wisdom. Okay? You either are going to be successful financially or you're going to be unsuccessful financially. Either way you go, you're going to have problems. So which way would be better to go? See? So this is what he's telling us. If life on this earth is what you're after, you're not going to find it. Well, then in verse 5 he says, he looks at the other fool. He says, so you don't want to be a skillful worker. Better, he said, the fool foldeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh. Now that's the opposite of this guy up here. See? Randy over here is a jeweler and he goes down and he draws pictures and he makes molds and he turns out beautiful jewelry and people say, well, so what? If I could sit in a nice warm building every day like he does and have things given to me like he's had given to him and with no problems, I could do that too. But I've had a tough life. I've had to grow up and work and scrape for everything I've got, and I haven't had the opportunities to have things laid out at my feet like Randy has. And so, is that enjoyable to hear all those things, Randy? Randy says, well, I won't be a skilled laborer then. Okay, so he goes down there tomorrow and he folds his hands. Okay, this is it. Let the government take care of him or whatever it is. Well, what happens? He eateth his own flesh. People won't talk about you so much that way, but what happens to you? You destroy yourself. You destroy your family. You destroy your dignity. You destroy your self-esteem. You just eat up and consume yourself. So in verse 6 he said, better is a handful with quietness than two handfuls with labor and striving after wind. Now what he says here is, in your employment, in your searching for this, it's better to have what you need to get by with in this life with quietness, without disruption, without contention, without a lot of aggravation and fighting and quarrels and bickering and all of this. If you can live in this life without all of that uproar in your life, that's better than having two handfuls. Now, what's the extra handful for? If one handful is all you need to get along, what's two handfuls do? That's your luxury, you see. That's your luxury. So it's better to just get along in life with quietness and peace with your friends and neighbors than it is to have all of the luxury, the boats and the yachts and the summer homes and the winter homes and the vacation in the Caribbean and on down the line with labor and striving after wind. Where you go out, you work real hard and you're striving and fighting and after it's all over, you have all of your striving after money is the same as striving after wind. It's exactly the same as you work trying to catch the wind. We talked about that in chapter 1. So, what's the answer in as far as laboring and work is concerned? Use your abilities. Use your talents. Be happy and contented with the necessities of life. Isn't that about what Paul said? To be content therewith. Be content with the necessities of life. If God bestows riches upon you, be happy, use them. But don't go after them if it's going to cause a striving and a bickering and a quarrel and a fight. And isn't that the way that a lot of people go about getting rich? Always in court, always in a lawsuit, always bickering and striving, losing friends, and all of this. No, that's not what life is all about. All right, then 7. He said, now here's another little bit of advice. Then I returned. Now you notice up in chapter 4, verse 1, he says, then I returned. In other words, what he means is, let's get back on the subject again. See, let's go back and rethink this. Now, let's think about something else. So let's return now and think about something else. Then I returned and saw vanity under the sun. I got to meditating, got back, started looking again to see life on this earth, life under the sun, how it's vain. He said to me, there is one, that means there are certain people that are alone. See, there is one that is alone, and he hath not a second. Now this is a fellow without a friend. Somebody that is alone, they do not have any companion, they do not have any friend. That'd be a pretty good way to go, wouldn't it? Because generally if you have a companion, you have a friend, you have somebody that's causing you trouble. So, why not just be a hermit? And get rid of all troublemakers. And don't have any friends. Okay, he said, yea, he hath neither son nor brother. He didn't get married, didn't have any children. He was lucky, his dad didn't have any children, so he doesn't have any brothers he has to put up with. And here's a guy who has it made. He and he alone is all he has to take care of. So he said, yet there is no end of all his labor. Now here's a fellow that the only person on this earth he cares anything about, that he associates with, is himself. He already has $6 million. What would a good hermit do if he had $6 million? Or $60 million? Nobody to take care of. What would he do? Or he'd hide it. And then what would he do? Go out and work some more. That's right. He'd get out and try to make another $6 million, and it would just be a drive to do this. Just a horrendous drive to do this. Why? It says, neither are his eyes satisfied with riches. Now there's a problem man has. You have that disease. I have that disease. Now right now, every one of you sitting there thinks, if somehow or another I could win $1 million, or if I could work and earn $1 million, if I had $1 million, I could put it in the bank, I could draw $100,000 a year just off of the interest, and it would be there forever and ever and ever and ever, just drawing $100,000. That would solve your problems, wouldn't it? I mean, that would really solve your problem. Now, if you had that $1 million, do you know what would happen to you the next day? You'd want another million. You'd want the other million just as much as you wanted the first million. And you can never, ever be satisfied. Now that is built within an individual. It's just built within them. To illustrate that, take something that you really like. Maybe I won't mention what you really like, but take an art show, if you're interested in art. And you go to the greatest art show that there is. And Rembrandts and everything else hanging on the walls there. It's just tremendous. This art show. You have arrived. You have seen it. Will you ever want to see another art show if you're an artist? Will you ever care to see another one? Why, of course you will. In fact, that'll even make you want to see the next one worse, won't it? If you go on vacation and you just have the most wonderful time that you've ever had, and you see things that you've never seen, and it just it just couldn't be better. Will you ever want to go on another vacation? When? But when you're driving home, you won't go worse than when you started. See? If you go on a picnic, and you go out and on 4th of July, and it is the best picnic you ever had, will you say, I'm happy and contented, I've seen it all? No. And on and on and on it goes, you see. You eat a certain food, go to a restaurant, let's say, and they have a dessert there that just knocks your teeth right out of your mouth. The best you have ever eaten. Are you content and say, now, I'll never, ever, ever want to eat a dessert again? No. In other words, human beings are not made so they can be satisfied, because they're always striving for greater goals. Now, is that good or bad? I didn't ask if it's all right. I asked if it's good or bad. It's good. That's right. Yeah. The reason I said that is it's not just, you know, okay, that's fine. No, it's good. That's great. I'm glad God made me that way. I'm glad God made me so that when I made my first million, that the next day I'll just have a tremendous drive from a second million. I'm glad God made me that way. Now, it's a shame if I do that after I make my first million next week. But if I do it, see, it'd be a terrible thing to do. But I'm sure glad God made me like that. Why? That's right. Otherwise, there would never be any self-improvement. I would never, ever try to improve myself. When I reached what I thought was the best, I just stopped there. By the way, when do you reach what you think is the best? When was the first time that you thought you were the greatest thing that ever walked on the face of this earth? For you boys, I can relate to playing ball. When was the first time that you felt that you were the greatest ball player the world has ever known? Was it something? It was before you were six, I know. Was it three or four? See? And you girls, the same thing, you see, that you can ask. Now, if we didn't have that drive, we would all be three-year-old kids running around. See? So don't ever get the idea that you are about to arrive, and then, you say, no, you have already gone through that 10,000 times. If you didn't have this ability, this unusual ability to never be satisfied, there wouldn't be a one of you sitting where you are today as successful as what you are today. It's a good thing. See, it's a good thing. But we misuse it. Okay, here's a problem. This poor old buddy, not only does he want to make another 6 million, but then he has a problem of what to do with his first six and what to do with his second. And here it is again. We've already talked it. For whom then, saith he, do I labor and deprive my soul of good? This also is vanity, yea, it is a sore travail. So the poor fellow says, I have to keep working. I have to keep trying to make my next million. I have to keep searching for a higher goal. Why? I've got to do it. Why? I can't retire and move to the beaches of the Caribbean. Why? Because he would lose total respect for himself. A human being has to strive for higher goals, or they lose total respect for themselves. So I have to make that other. But now when I make that other, I have played it smart so that I am not associated with anybody. Nobody gives Lowell Williams problems. You say what you want to say and you'll not hurt me because I'm not your friend. I've learned to live by myself. Now, what's my problem? I've got to make the next million. Yeah. My goal out there, if I do make it, what am I going to do with it? If I don't make it, I lose self-respect. If I do make it, what will I do with it? See? I don't know what I'll do with it. Well, he says that is a travail. That is a pain. That is a sad situation. I guess old Ivor would be a good illustration of this. A very successful man, and when he died, he had nobody to leave it to. Nobody. No children. Nothing. So he left it to the University of Washington. And the Pullman University. Gave it to them and said, use it for a cooking school and try to learn how to fix clams better. That's what his life was dedicated to. And that's what he will be remembered as. Isn't that great? I mean, what did he do? He said, keep clam. And then he gave some money to learn how to cook clams. That's it. You suppose that he really felt good when he was making out his will and saying, my life has really been a useful life. No, he fit right in this. Well, verse 9. He said, two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. At least you're working for the other person. You're sharing with the other person. Now then, this is a positive thing that we need to understand. That if you want to find happiness in this life, you're going to have to share your life with somebody. You cannot live it by yourself. It has to be shared with somebody. You have to help. You have to do good to other human beings before you can really have that self-esteem that you desire. Now, he said there's some reasons for this. They have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. Woe to him that is alone when he falleth, and hath not another to lift him up. So, when people go out in the woods to hunt, two hunters go out, well, they know this. Sometimes you go out by yourself, and it's a very foolish thing in the Northwest for a man to go out hunting in the woods by himself. Dumb, foolish, idiotic. Why?
May never return.
You may never return. You may fall over a log and break your leg 2 miles out there and not be able to crawl back over that log or crawl back up that cliff and so forth. I had a hunting companion that would go out and hunt by himself, and one day he fell over a cliff and broke his back. Way back, 3 or 4 or 5 miles back in the woods, and broke his back back there. And he's in trouble, wasn't he? You see? And I don't know how he did it, but somehow he crawled out, got in his truck, and was coming down the mountain when he finally gave out, ran over a cliff and down in the ditch, and that's where they found him and hauled him to the hospital and patched him back up. But what would happen to 999 people out of 1,000 that break their back out there? They have nobody to lift them up. You're going to die. Okay, now the same thing is true here in town. You don't have to get in the woods. Emotionally speaking, when you fall, if you don't have somebody to lift you up, you're generally a cripple. You're it's going to destroy you in every way. So you need human companionship. That's what he says. Now, if you have human companionship, what are you going to have? Problems. That's right, man alive. He who marries a wife marries a bucket full of problems, right? There is no proverb going the other way, by the way. If you have a close relationship, there will be problems. Maybe you don't have an argument, but your mate gets sick. Are there problems? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you have any problems today, Brian? You happy, contented? Boy, I'm glad I'm here without her. You know, home, sitting home. Now, see, you have problems. You're going to have problems, even though you might never have an argument, you might never have a disagreement. You're going to have problems. If you have children, you're going to have problems? Oh, boy. Before you ever get out of the hospital, you're going to say, what did I do? See? Yeah, you're going to have problems. So, the thing is, don't have any kids, right? That's another problem. You really want to have problems, then don't have these little problems. And then, one day, you're going to cry and ache and pain and say, I wish I'd have had a bunch of those little problems. See? Because I don't like this set of problems. Now, what he's saying is, in human companionship, they're going to have problems. Which is the best, by the way, since you're going to have problems with another person or without another person, which is the best? Go ahead and have your problems with them. That's a whole lot better than having them without them. Now again, he says in verse 11, again, if two lie together, they shall have warmth. But how can one be warm alone? Lord, you're out somewhere and you're cold and it's freezing. What do? Just lay down and throw a few leaves over your body and get warm? No. But if you have somebody else that you can lie down with, use their body heat, then it can save your life. You see, the body heat of one can save the life of another. 12. If a man prevail against him, now if you're alone, somebody comes up and they prevail against him, that is alone, they can whip you, they can knock you down, two shall withstand him. There's a lot of people that can just whip me all over the room. And if I'm by myself up there in the office in the morning and some guy walks in and says, buddy, take your shoes off and throw them out the window, my shoes are going out the window. And he can pick me up, slap me around any way he wants to, and I'll call him, yes, sir. But do you know something? If there's another guy in the room who's my friend, what will I tell him when he says, throw your shoes out the window? No, I say, I think that maybe it'd be the best just throw you out with your shoes. See? My whole attitude will change. What changed my whole attitude and turned this wimp into a jock? Another guy. Yeah, I have an ally. See, another guy on the other side of the room. That's what gave me all of this companionship in order to get along in this world. He really shouldn't have any problems, should he? Especially if he's ruled for a long time. An old king. He wouldn't have any problems. So that's what we ought to do. See? Well, he's going to show there. And that's really a sad, sick situation. Now, next week, God willing, I'll be in Illinois. And so there won't be any class down here. So this class will meet upstairs next week. And then the following week, come down here and we'll see whether we want to be a king.